Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Build
Film
Conversation.
Hooray! Woo!
So, I'm Richard Nicholas. Hello. With me to chat about a film is Anthony Evans.
Hello, too.
And Abigail Bain.
Hi there.
So, guys, we all have once again done our film club thing, watched a film. Now we're here to chat about it. That film was chosen by me and was The Harder They Come. Can someone give the details of the film so that there's extra clarity that we're all on the same page?
Yes, Richard, I can. The Harder They Come is from 1972. It is directed and written by Perry Hansel. It is co-written by Trevor D. Roan. Stars Jimmy Cliff, Janet Bartley and Carl Bradshaw. Wishing to become a successful reggae singer, a young Jamaican man finds himself tied to corrupt record producers and drug pushers.
Doesn't he just?
Does.
So, we usually talk about our expectations of what we, you know, thought the film was going to be like. And seeing as I picked it, I will start by saying I saw it because I wanted to see some Jamaican films. They're hard to come by. You know, it's not exactly Hollywood. It doesn't got loads and loads of films to its name, but you know, it's a country and they're going to produce films, but so they had a few and it was one of the more popular ones that I could get hold of, so I just tried it out because I was like, I've got to see some Jamaican cinema. And I saw it and I went, I don't know if I understood it all, but I was intrigued by it and I thought it was an interesting crime film, so I was like, let's see if you guys can watch it and see what you think, because one of the problems is it's quite hard to follow the language. There shouldn't be a language barrier. They're speaking English, but it's the 70s. They're speaking in Jamaican slang, and some of the characters are a little bit stoned. They're not characters for enunciating, so there's a lot of barriers in the language, despite it being in English. So that was one of the things. And I did tell you guys that before you saw it. What were you expecting? Let's start with you, Anthony.
I don't really know what. I don't think I've ever seen or even like heard of a Jamaican film before, so I didn't really know what to expect. The only thing I could really base it on is kind of by the kind of the way that it looked in the trailer and from the time it was made. The only comparison I had was kind of black exploitation films,
sure,
from the same area. So I suppose I was expecting something kind of like that, kind of lots of perhaps lots of violence, maybe lots of sex and drugs and stuff like that.
It is a kind of blaxploitation film of sorts. Or
it is. I wouldn't really call it exploitation so much.
Because it's a pretty crime film, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think the film that comes to mind, if you go like Jamaican and cinema, is Cool Runnings, Disney's story of the Jamaican bobsleigh team.
Even that didn't come to mind.
I think that was the, like, when you try and think of great Jamaican films, you kind of draw a blank. And there's some, like, there's documentaries now about Bob Marley and the reggae scene. So, you know, if you do want to learn about Jamaica a little bit and its cultural background, that's a good starting point. He's a fascinating man, is Bob Marley. And you find yourself going, oh, I both respect you and find you horrible now. Like, there's lots of attributes to his life where you go, oh, even though you were loved by thousands, millions of people throughout the world for what you did for music, I don't know if I agree with your lifestyle choices. But that's, you know, a discussion for a different film. Abby, what were you expecting when I suggested The Harder They Come?
Well, the only thing I really had to go by was the poster. And the poster paints it as a very different picture to what it actually is.
It's very weird looking as a poster, isn't it?
It is. So that put me off on the wrong foot. To begin with.
Were you expecting a psychedelic animation, perhaps?
Well, based on what you'd said, I knew it wasn't an animation, but I was expecting it to be a little more 70s and surreal.
Well, he does invest in some very large collars at one point. There's some interesting fashion choices throughout, and I can't blame it entirely on the 70s, because Jamaica have a thing for hats that gets explored a little bit in this film. That I found fascinating and enjoyable.
On a similar note to what Abby was saying, I also, like, I don't think I saw the same poster, but I did see a poster of the film before I saw the film. And it was quite a dull poster, but the kind of main thing about it was like a statement, and it said, infinitely more intelligent than Last Tango in Paris. and I really didn't know how to take that.
It's true. No. I've seen Last Tango in Paris, and I wouldn't have even thought to compare them.
No, exactly.
not in any way, really. It's odd.
I can only assume they were out at the same time.
Yeah. The poster to me sort of says, it's going to be like a kind of Huggy Bear type character, getting up to scrapes and doing crazy stuff with guns and maybe, you know, bikes or something. Like, it's kind of... But it does look a little bit like, did someone just draw their own poster for fun, like, rather than actually commission this? But, you know, I think it's an interesting poster, and it maybe does set a slightly odd tone, but I don't know. Anyway, like, so, we all, the first time I watched it, I didn't know what to expect, other than some kind of gritty, 70s stuff.
Mm.
I guess we should just talk about the story and the film and whatever comes up, and then that'll help us know what we thought of it.
I suppose the first obvious thing to talk about is the language.
Yeah, well, let's get it talked about, because it is weird, isn't it? Like, they're speaking English, and yet it's very hard to know what's going on. And we're all white, so we're not going to be... It's not like a race thing, though. It's just...
They have very thick accents, and they're talking in slang. So,
and the foley isn't exactly, you know, brilliant. The sound on it is occasionally like overdubbed weirdly, and generally it's like a low quality, because, you know, we're talking about a fairly low budget film. It was like a big achievement to make something this grandiose as a story for a small Jamaican budget.
But yeah, you did, like before, like you said before, you mentioned that there's a bit of a language barrier going on with this film. And I thought it wouldn't be that bad. I suppose we might lose something now and again. But I remember, like, the first person to talk, there was like during the opening credits, there's like a bus going past and then it almost crashes or something. Yeah. And then a passenger speaks and I'm like, I didn't get a word of that. And then the next person to speak, I didn't get a word of that.
Yeah, so but after... people say stuff on the bus around here, and you're like, what? Like, pretty crazy people get on buses.
This is true.
But yeah, it does carry on, and you're like, am I going to even be able to follow this?
Yeah, so I have to admit, it took me about 7 minutes into the film, but I had to put the subtitles on after a while, because I was getting nothing. I was getting the odd word, and that's about it.
Yeah, it would be like someone trying to watch a foreign film where they're speaking a language you only know a smattering of. It's a little bit like that at times. Like, you can kind of... And also, you know, the Jamaican dialect, I guess, is weird because Britain colonised Jamaica at some point. I mean, my history isn't brilliant, but generally speaking, we colonised it and pseudo-enslaved the people of Jamaica, as we did many places. But then, you know, we gave them Christianity, so it's quite a Christian country. But then there's, like, that kind of weird... broken English that's developed into a kind of slang now. It's not like the people of Jamaica are stupid and don't know how to speak. It's their dialect is from, like, people who are essentially slaves taught to speak English, you know, to be servants and things, and it's developed into their own style and language, and it's very much a kind of almost a language of its own while simultaneously being English.
I will say, though, as the film kind of progressed and you kind of start getting used to, like, the weird kind of sentence patterns they're using, it becomes a little easier to follow.
Yeah, because you got turns of phrase that you could easily understand what they mean. So it's like, my play, they might say my play, meaning it's my go to play the dominoes or whatever. Like, and so you get, like, a sense of, okay, when they use terms like that, and you can kind of, you get used to them, as you say. Abby, what were some of the... Well, like, can we list off some of the problems you might have accessing the dialogue of the film?
Well, the sound quality wasn't very good either, which didn't help.
Yes. Mm. On top of that, we are all not Jamaican people, so we're not au fait with, like, Jamaican slang and accents, because the accent is there and the slang's there.
Plus, we're not from the 70s.
Yes, so it's the era, the type of people speaking, and then, you know... I don't know how much poverty plays a part, or if it's like, I don't know, just they enunciate less, and they I mean, you know, their grammar is appalling. No, but it's just, you know, we got grammar problems, we got accent problems, we got a pseudo-language barrier. Some of the characters are gangsters and are using maybe modern slang for the 70s that only gangs would use. It's hard to say. There's so many things in the way of understanding it. So I could understand it would have a lot of people would have to switch off. Personally, I found myself trying all the harder to keep watching because I was like, I want to try and understand the culture by watching people interact. So, you know, I sympathise. I suspect it wasn't that easy to watch at times, though.
No, it did. I think I could have enjoyed this film more, but I couldn't get into their world to do it.
Well, Anthony had the advantage of he decided to put subtitles on, and we didn't use subtitles to watch it when we watched it, and just followed it, you know, by understanding the odd bit. Well, actually, you can understand a lot. Jimmy Cliff is the main character, and he does the most speaking throughout, and he's quite easy to understand most of the time. But it is in these conversations with people on the street and he interacts with, and you kind of go, right, I know we're talking about a mango. Right, hang on. Let's get this straight. You have come from the countryside. You have supposed to have brought a mango for your mum. She is annoyed with you because she didn't know her mother had died. Like, you kind of find yourself going, I'm following. And then suddenly you're like, hang on, what did they just say? Why is he going this way? So for the most part, we understand. So what happens then in the film is that Jimmy Smith plays Ivan, who is a...
Jimmy Cliff.
Sorry. So did I say Jimmy Smith every time?
You did.
Oh, sorry, Jimmy Cliff. I called you Smith. I apologise. I mean, let's talk about him then, because that's a good place to start. He's a successful reggae artist. Is reggae the type of music? Most Jamaican music is reggae, but there could be subtle differences. So he's a successful musician and artist, and, you know, he partly was put in the film, I think, for star power. He certainly would have been known by the people of Jamaica, who probably, you know, watched this most of all nations, you know? Did you guys find Jimmy Cliff a good actor? Do you find him compelling on screen?
No.
It's a bit... Because this is the only thing I've really seen him in. Yeah. And you're kind of not really meant to like his character, like, by the end at all. Sure. I really don't know how to judge it. Because, you know, I didn't like his character, which might mean he was doing a really good job. Or maybe I didn't like his character because he was doing a bad job. It's hard to quantify this one. I think so.
You think he was intriguing?
Yeah, I think... I don't know. That's someone else.
It's all right. Here's what I will say to point you in the direction of positivity. Because I'm fairly positive to this film. And I would say his eyes are very good. He's got an actor's eyes. He's not switched off in scenes. He's feeling what he's saying, and he's trying to be believable, and I respect that. And the other reason I think he's quite good for the role is he can relate to growing up in Jamaica and trying to break into the music scene. He successfully did it in his career, but he would have known what it's like to play someone who's hungry for attention and to be in the music industry.
And at times literally hungry.
Yeah, so... You know, he must be able to relate to the character. So whatever they were going for in the film, I don't think they got far off what he was meant to be portrayed as. Obviously, Jimmy Cliff, not a gangster, we hope. I mean, actually, don't know. I mean, he could secretly be a gangster, or he could be, and I'm just ignorant. But I think he did an okay job by me. And I think you could tell in his eyes that he wasn't just, like, doing it for fun.
Yeah, fair enough. I think my problem is, because the whole film... was very realistic, I think, and seemed to really portray, like, real Jamaican life. And because of that, everyone just kind of felt like they weren't acting, if you know what I mean. They were just being themselves. And I suppose that is an indicator that everyone was doing a really good job.
Yeah, it could be the case that so many of the people in it... And there's lots of people filmed, even, like, just the extras... could easily have not signed permission slips to be in this. It feels very naturalistic and close to real life. And yeah, everything is not played like we are putting on a production. This is played like we're just doing the story we were told.
This is how it is in Jamaica.
Yeah.
In the city, yeah.
So, Ivan, the character, isn't very likable. Jimmy Cliff is playing him, but Ivan is dislikable. I think there is an element where you kind of should feel sorry for him, right? Upon second watching, I felt like he was being held back by his circumstances, and then he turned to do crime and things. The things he did wrong were partly because his life was being controlled by music producers who weren't paying him enough, and then drug dealers who weren't paying him enough, and horrible preacher men who were stopping him do what he wanted as well.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Like especially at the beginning, there's no real reason to not like him, and you do. You're on his side. He's struggling to make do, and you know he's got someone he fancies, but there's obstacles to that, and you're kind of on his side, and he wants to get his music out there, but there's obstacles to that. So, but there's just, I don't know, he slips very easily into violence, and I don't want to say he seems like lazy, but there's definitely a kind of,
I want to take the easy route.
Yeah, about him, which I suppose is then in his downfall overall.
Yeah, he does seem like, even when, you know, normal people, they have drawbacks in their life. They either rise above and get over them, or they're defeated, but they move on with their lives. But he does, when he gets into confrontation, he is either violent, or he makes the wrong decisions, or does something fairly selfish. Anyone, like the woman he cares for throughout the film, he doesn't care for that much. I think it's he's quite an adolescent man who hasn't learned to deal with life properly. And it's kind of, as we're introduced to him, he's coming in on a bus from the country where he's apparently been working with his grandmother, and it's just he's been sent there by his family. He's got quite a small family. It's just his mum and his grandmother's recently died, and that's all we know really. And he's come back from the country on this bus. There's nice reggae music playing throughout the film. They've got some really classic reggae tracks, as well as a lot of Jimmy Cliff. I mean, they do rely quite heavily on the title track, The Harder They Come, throughout this film. I mean, he does a whole live performance recording that's it's contextualized in the film, but I got a bit tired of it. That's a side point.
Fair enough. I mean, it's an old technique of kind of reusing the same kind of theme. But I think because this is like the first major kind of Jamaican film to hit the scene and get any kind of like coverage, this is like really the first time like the world is properly exposed to reggae music.
That's true. So you're going to put in some heavy hitters, and obviously, you know, there's a nice mix of popular Jamaican music from the time that they're trying to sell, as well as it's selling Jimmy Cliff, it's selling Jamaica as a location, it's selling the brand of Jamaica in a way, and it is kind of, it's, if it gets successful, it'll pour more interest towards Jamaica and Jamaican culture, and that's good for the country and the industry, and, you know, so it's, I guess it is kind of a mission statement as well as a, you know, a stylistic choice. But I think it's good, we're setting him up as a sympathetic character. He's coming, he's got all these, like, he's got his bags packed, he's got all his things, he's weighed down with stuff. And he's got his mango for his mum, that's important. And he gets into town, and almost the first thing that happens to him is some bloke with a cart comes up to him and asks if he's got any money. And then, like, he's basically getting a hand with all of his luggage on this cart, isn't he? And then that guy tricks him. It seemed like he sent him across the street to collect some debt from someone. And the guy he sent him to was across the busy road, and he didn't know what he was talking about. And then this guy legs it with all of Ivan's possessions. So he's very much sympathetic to begin with. What did you make when this stuff unfurled, guys?
Yeah, actually, that was pretty, the way they did it, because he's not... I suppose, like, not only because he is kind of, like, on his own in the big city, but it was to me, because it's Jamaica, it seemed like very foreign. So it seemed very like unsettling to be in this place. And then when that happened, it's just like, oh God, this man's got no hope.
Yeah. And the fact is, he's looking for his mum, who lives in one of the shanty towns in one of the, I don't know if it's Kingston or wherever, but it's like a major town in Jamaica that he's in. And he looks for the shanty town, or like slums area, where his mum lives. And presumably he would have brought all of his things back and, got back to live, mentioned the news, like he has to break the news that to his mum that his grandmother has died, and they've had the funeral and they couldn't contact her. So he gets there and he's been already robbed, and he goes to the slums, essentially, where his mum lives, and has to, break bad news to her and say that he wants to stay in town despite her wishes, or that he should go back to the country, And so it's a very, tragic opening for us to start empathising with. And, of course, what was great, I love the mum character. She's so, she's quite weird. The acting's a little weird because she's crying and it sounds a bit fake. Mm-hmm. But I love the way she, in particular, talks. It's just like, where's my mango? It's just the loveliest lilt to her voice. And what you doing? It's like, oh, it's such a pleasure to hear her speak. She's one of the few, female characters that we hear a lot from. Hear a bit from, and it's like, just generally speaking, they have a lovely accent I like to hear, and their interaction I found compelling, and it was just, I can't mention I was robbed to you, because that would be lame, but there wasn't a good crop this year of mangoes, so bye, Mum, here's a few quid from Grandmother, very,
when he hands over one note, which can't be more than $10 or something.
If anything, he comes across worse to his mum. To his mum, he must come across like a liar. Like, he's come home and he hasn't got any belongings, and he doesn't explain himself very much. He just says, yeah, Gran's dead, we spent lots of money on the funeral, there's not much left for you. He must come across like a slightly untrustworthy son. And she kind of accuses that what are you going to do if you stay in the town? Are you going to go back to crime? That's all that you'll do. And she, in the last moment suggests she could see this preacher guy. That Ivan can see this guy she knows, a preacher, who can get him work. And he reluctantly takes it. But at first, he spends a while trying to get a job, doesn't he? Just, trying to find work on his own. And it's quite pathetic.
Yeah, it's quite harrowing.
Yeah, those are some of the elements I like better about the movie, is just sort of really getting a sense of what it's like to exist there.
Yeah, I mean, when he turns up, he walks past one of the drug dealers, who later becomes important to the film. I think it's the same guy, but he's playing a very aggressive game of dominoes, just on an upturned.
It's the only way to play dominoes.
You have to get excited about it. Yeah, but he instantly is trying to find work, and he just, he's not really qualified enough to work in construction. He's asking around and generally not getting anywhere. He's even to the point where he has to sleep in a bus shelter. I think he even just wanders onto a rich woman's property to sort of beg to wash her car or something. And it's the kind of the only rich person there's a few police and stuff. There's a few rich people, but it's the first Jamaican resident who's rich and doesn't really care about his class of citizen. I mean, he did just wander onto her property. But she kind of gets really cross with her cleaners for not locking the fence or whatever, which I thought was interesting. But he's like a little stray dog out in the town on his own, so, what's he going to do? And eventually, I guess, he comes to this preacher guy. And that doesn't set him up altogether brilliantly either, does it really? Did anyone else understand what his job was when he got it from the preacher guy?
I thought he was just sort of an odd job man.
Like a tinker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, I think maybe more like an apprentice to a mechanic or carpenter or something like that.
Yeah. And he's working with a guy who's not very nice. He's the slightly chunky, muscular bloke he's working with is a bit, just a bit of a git, really, isn't he? He's not that sympathetic and likeable. And then on top of that, because Ivan isn't very helpful either, he's a bit lazy, as you mentioned, Anthony. He kind of doesn't do himself any favours, and you know, doesn't, that guy he doesn't get on with. And the preacher, who has sort of not you know, has taken some sympathies, or he's given him a job, but he's quite a strict man, and he's the guardian of a young woman who Ivan takes a fancy to, and that's kind of the start of the first decent bit of narrative going on. Does anyone want to talk about what transpires with the preacher and her is it a ward? Is that the right term?
Yeah, that's the right term. It's the preacher is like this, essentially like the adopted father of Elsa, who is like I suppose a fundamentally good Christian woman. She sings in the choir and she is very nice and she's all that. But there's a kind of a creepy thing between her and the preacher, where people are kind of always gossiping about whether, even though he's her adopted father, maybe he's just kind of keeping her around to one day become his wife, kind of thing.
Yeah, I think the analogy the mechanic who is working with Ivan comes up with is she's like some kind of a cherry tree that if the preacher doesn't pick, he's going to. It's a rather just kind of disturbing interpretation of a woman coming of age or something. But yeah, it's implied, but you know, the preacher's strict, but he never does anything particularly wrong. He's sometimes a bit too harsh, and where maybe a bit of rational, reasonable nature would have been helpful.
But because of Ivan's kind of blossoming relationship with Elsa, he's probably a little bit more harsh with him.
Yeah, it could be jealousy, could be a kind of fatheriness. That's a bit ambiguous. And Ivan is a sort of, you know, he's a tearaway from the slums, and he's not particularly Christian. I mean, he does an element of Tolkien joining in, but we get a big dump of, like, Christian singing, and we get a sense of the kind of what it's like to be in a Jamaican fellowship in the church, and there's lots of singing and stuff intercut with Ivan. Essentially, we establish that he's now living possibly in a scrapped car, in some kind of mechanic role or tinker. It's a bit vague. I'm not sure how much it clarifies, but it basically establishes he's got a job where he can afford to buy clothes and feed himself and buy a toy gun and some naughty magazines to entertain himself.
I couldn't understand the value of money in this.
Go on.
Like, he'd beg for like 50 cents, which to us now sounds like nothing.
It's the 70s app.
It'd be like begging for 20p.
Yeah.
And when he got offered $20 for making the record.
It's like, you couldn't buy a vinyl for 20 quid now.
Yeah. So I spent a lot of my time going, what?
You're just being baffled because you can't understand the past, Abby, that's all.
Yeah.
it is maddening to think, because, you know, 20 quid seems like, obviously, it's undercutting someone who's produced, you know, made a record, essentially. And then at the same time, well, if we up that, you know, it's still, by modern standards, it's basically, the whole dilemma about him making a record that comes a bit later is, well, there's a record producer who controls the music scene in Jamaica, and basically the offer is, you can be paid for your record and I can make loads of money off of it, or you can keep it and it'll never get airplay, and either way, I win. Like, there's a kind of interesting story going on that's less about the crime element of this film, and it's actually the first the second obstacle he has once he's settled in his life is he wants to make a record, you know, doesn't he, and maybe get out of the slums that way. And it's got a weird system in play where basically the guy who owns the studio is the guy who controls what gets put on the radio, he's the guy who controls who gets to record. And it's kind of a dictatorship that you know, you have to get through to get your music heard, isn't it? It's kind of weird.
Mm. It is a weird one. And I assume it's accurate, to an extent.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose it's, again, that's a kind of microcosm of just how the industry works in general.
Yeah, I mean, it is, in a sense, like, big record producers are the name makers. Like, in modern times, most bands would like to think you can be independent and just produce your music, get your fan base going, get online interest, and then eventually build. But with this, like, film seemed to suggest, the simplistic version of this is, if you can't get the big producer to okay you, you can't do anything. It's just on the sort of lower level, it seems like, you know, like this is just a small town problem or a city problem for music. Because Jamaica is full of people who want to be musicians. It's one of the really successful jobs that Jamaica is able to make. It made a whole succession of successful reggae stars. And so it seems like an aspirational job to have to get you, you know, a better life, isn't it? But it's seemingly, this film suggests, a difficult task. What do you guys make of the record producer, man?
I liked his kind of easy smarm that he had. That was very good.
Good way of putting it.
Yeah, it's sort of like all of these like Jamaican guys are begging at the gates for him to just listen to their pitch or to hear their music. And he just does an audition on the street to start off with, doesn't he?
Yeah, that was weird, actually. When there was just some guys who showed up and they were just doing essentially some busking next to his gate while he was in the car. Then he went, no, it's too slow, go away.
Yeah.
And that plant, I thought they were going to bottle it at first as well.
Yeah, they looked like, let's collect our thoughts and we can't just sing here impromptu. But then they did. They did quite a nice melody, didn't they?
Yeah, no, it was a shame because it was quite a nice little song.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, after Ivan gets the seed planted of the idea that, I could be a musician, like he's kind of, if I audition for this guy, I'll get in there and maybe I can, you know, produce music. And essentially, he's sent there on an errand from the preacher. The preacher wants some kind of record to be sent for a Christian-related radio production. I'm not really sure quite what it was. But he takes this record and he gets to go into the studio and see a recording happen live. And he manages to sort of say, look, I want to make a song too. And they kind of don't take him that seriously, but they sort of offer him a pity opportunity to audition, don't they?
Yeah, that was a weird moment because I thought they were just kind of just telling him, like, oh yeah, auditions tomorrow, or maybe the next day, who knows, just kind of fobbing him off. But
like
actually, they were giving him a chance. I kind of felt like it was a bit easy for him.
Well, you know, it's a really like, this guy basically is a god of the music industry, and he can decide which peasants may have an attempt at singing. Because, you know, Ivan hadn't proved himself, but at the same time, it's a really difficult, you know, back then to produce it. Like, you can't record yourself unless you got the equipment, can you, back then? Not like now when any schmo can record their voice however they want. we also have at this time him developing the relationship with a young girl who's in the care of the preacher and starting to cause a little bit of waves of trouble potentially with the preacher and the mechanic who, you know, part of the story. And he's establishing his relationship with her and managing to, you know, to take her on a lovely bike ride. He's fixed up a bike from scratch, and that's another key element to the story, actually. Fixed up this bike thing, and he's took her out for a ride on it.
So, yeah, this is a bit of a key plot point for the bike, isn't it? Because I suppose that, first of all, it's his first kind of thing that he has for himself, if you know what I mean. He's taken the bike, and he's rebuilt it, and he's using it to sort of do some jobs. And it's the kind of like it's the kind of basis of a good kind of career, if you know what I mean.
And it's
like he's doing everything right, and he's putting a lot of work into it, and he's kind of getting there, if you know what I mean.
Yes, you know, he's spending what money he has to not only, you know, do the like buy food and clothes, but he's also, I mean, he does decide, right, I've got to have a cool yellow hat and some sunglasses now. I'm done looking like a schmo.
He does have a very distinct sense of fashion, doesn't he?
I mean, it's the 70s, and it's Jamaica, which they're a gaudy bunch at times, aren't they? No offence, Jamaican people. You're lovely, and I kudos, but wow. Some hats you had back in the day, and still now. So, you know, he's also investing in this bike anyway, and he's spent money on tyres, he's repairing it in his spare time, and that even gets him in trouble. He can't even do that without people just getting on his nerves about it and saying, oh, what are you doing? You shouldn't be doing that. That's the preacher's bike. Who said you could have it? That's kind of the problem, really, is
symbolism!
It is good. But it's establishing his material wants, and then when they're in jeopardy is when he becomes more dangerous, really. Because he's not overly material, you know, it's not very materialistic to be like, I want a bike and to have a few nice things. Like, it's a very low bar of aspiration. Like, the happiest he is when he's stolen, like, a Cadillac and he's just driving it to scare some seagulls on a piece of grass. He seems very pleased, even though he's in a lot of trouble, to be just driving a car with his sunglasses on, you know? So, you know, we can't really be that hard on him. Yet.
No, not yet. Like, and who is it? Like, even, you know, I think he gets, like, does he get a courier job? Or at least he's getting some sort of work from his bike. And yeah. It's just a shame that, like, is it the mechanic or is it the preacher who tries to just take it back off him?
Well, he gets...
And that kind of, like, is the major escalation, I suppose, of his story.
Part of it is he convinces this young woman to give him to get the key off the preacher, or to steal the key and let him into the church to practice his music. And the preacher frowns on the music generally. He seems to misunderstand what type of music it is as well. He's very behind with the times and hates music of this kind and sees it as corrupting or something. And so he's annoyed that Ivan has been playing his music in the church after hours. And does anyone remember quite why he gets fired? Because he's not allowed to take his bike with him, and that causes the first violent scene that we get. What was the exact reason? I can't quite... He's just... The preacher's annoyed with him, isn't he?
I can't remember. I can't remember whether it was the preacher or the kind of horrible mechanic guy he worked with. Because if it was the mechanic guy he worked with, he was just horrible.
He was a nasty man.
Well,
and I think...
Oh, no, he also... the preacher finds the stuff in... Like he's got a few Playboys in his car, and... The preacher does not like Ivan anymore enough to put up with him. And at some point... I think I might have forgotten something, but he's fired, and Ivan comes to collect his bike, and the mechanic is like, take it, and he can't, and they fight. And they have quite a it starts off as just a bit of a push and a shove, and then suddenly Ivan... is shoved near to a knife, I think, and then the mechanic is smashing a glass bottle, and they're having, like, a glass bottle versus a knife fight. Deadliest warrior, who will win? And unfortunately for the mechanic, his face does not win, and he gets cut up a treat.
Yeah, I was... Even though I was kind of, like, I suppose expecting kind of violence, even that, like, was kind of like, ooh, that was quite, ooh. That was kind of unnecessarily violent.
He very much goes a bit too... Like, you know, when your man's defeated, you don't have to keep slashing away, you know, do you? And it wasn't overly... It was cut to look exciting, but it wasn't filmed to be gory. It just was a bit brutal. And a sign that maybe there's something more psychotic about Ivan. He's, like, hasn't got control of all of his... himself. But he was pushed. He was literally pushed. But he's maybe a little bit too violent in that instance. And it's weird because he gets arrested and his punishment is not, he's like let off by the judge on audio, like the judge is speaking, we can hear it but we don't see it. He's told he's not going to go to prison, but he's getting held over a barrel and whipped by some policeman or whatever. And that's kind of weird. We see him having his little bum comes out and he gets caned or whatever.
That is one of the funniest things I've seen. It's just that moment where they whip down his pants and he wobbles a bit.
Yeah, it's funny when he has a flashback to it as well, when he's a bit annoyed at the police. He remembers being whipped and his little bum is hanging out. And he does a little wee because it hurts, I suppose. And then it's kind of, that seems like pretty light punishment, really, for mutilating someone, potentially.
Well, they did say it's a first offence, I suppose. But you're right, that was a very violent crime that just happened.
And so with that problem, he manages to retain his girlfriend more or less. There's a point where he's seemingly living with his girlfriend and she's not under the control of the preacher as much. And he's also starting to try and get his record to have success. So he initially won't... We see Jimmy Cliff perform The Harder They Come. We see it a lot. He's got a very attractive long-sleeve jumper with a star on it I quite liked. And he sings the song, and we just film it, and it's quite long. Thoughts?
What's to say? It's a classic song, isn't it?
It is a good song.
But like you say, it does get repeated a lot throughout the film.
Yeah, it's just odd to have such a... Like, we could have maybe had a bit more of a montage. I don't know. It's an important scene because it's showing, oh, he's talented, and everyone's kind of enjoying it and is cautiously going, oh, this guy could be...
Yeah, and it's very poignant song as well. It's definitely about the kind of situation that character is in.
The lyrics very much can be applied to many different parts of the plot and generally the theme of the movie. So it's a really apt song. And a lot of the songs used, like, to sort of emphasise scenes, all the different songs by Jimmy Cliff and other artists, are all quite well chosen for the moment and to suggest the themes of the film. Do you enjoy the music, Abby?
Yes. Like you say, you did hear the same song several times. Yeah, I could have done a little bit more variation myself.
Yeah. But that's not... I mean, I think, Abby, you were the first person who lent me some reggae cassette tapes. So you kind of put me onto reggae and therefore influenced me into seeing this film. So you're to blame. It's your interest, casually though it may be, in reggae music. Now, there's some good songs, and essentially the problem that comes up is he won't sign the contract to say, I'm getting 20 quid and you get to keep the rights to this song I recorded from the producer. Mm. I want to see... I'll just take it then, because he's no fool. He knows it's not a good deal. But, everyone else has to accept it, but he hasn't, and he takes his record, and he can't get it. And none of the DJs will play it, because they all seem like, well, if we play something that isn't by this production company, we will be shut down. We won't get any, we won't get any other music from them, and they'll... This producer's almost like a gangster of his own industry, really, isn't he?
Mm.
He's got a forceful grip on the whole scene in Jamaica, or at least in the town. And that's the first... And then, essentially, Ivan has to go and, ask for him to get his $20 again and actually produce it. And then the sad thing, I guess, there is that because he's made a bit of a fuss and gone against the producer's wishes, the producer says to one of his colleagues, like, yeah, put it out, but don't push it. Don't tell them to play it, just, allow it to be played. And it's sort of, he sort of squashes it then, and he's, it's a harrowing story.
It is, the theme of control, or at least the lack of control.
And oppression.
Yeah, it's running all the way throughout, and this is like one of the major ones.
Yeah, because it's essentially starting off as a music biography piece, but then it's about different kinds of oppression, like crime.
All the points where he seems to be becoming more successful, like when he gets his bike, when he's fallen in love, there's always some form of control put on him where he can't do what he wants.
He doesn't get his fair share of anything, whether it's just a fair paycheck or a fair, deal with his record company, or even then when he becomes, when he gets involved with the drug industry. He finds out essentially the people at the top of the the people who are making the big money, the people at the top, it's the people who are importing large quantities of marijuana into the States or Cuba or wherever it's going. They're making hundreds of thousands, and he's making piddly money for just doing the dangerous part of the job and running drugs from one part of Jamaica to another, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's just a kind of horrible thing of, even no matter how hard he tries or how successful he is, there's always going to be some form of control over you that you just can't get rid of.
Yeah, I think the transition is made when his music is played in a club and he's bought new clothes for himself, maybe foolishly because he's only had 20 quid, and he wants to kind of impress his lady and he wants to show off a bit, and he's in the club. And the music is finally playing, and he's trying to brag, and people are like, that's alright. And he's like, it's good, isn't it? It's good, yeah. I reckon this song will be a hit. Is it, Stranger? not sure. Yeah, no, it's going to be good, you love it. And it's he's trying to, show off a bit. And then essentially he meets one of the drug dealers in the film, who, like, what's the thing? He essentially goes out the back and speaks to him a bit, and,
It's just a chance meeting, really.
I thought the drug dealer that he meets was the guy playing dominoes at the beginning with him.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well,
yeah. Oh, there's a bit at the beginning we kind of skipped over where they, just before he's going to look for work and after seeing his mum, they kind of go to the theatre and watch, like, an old...
Django.
spaghetti western kind of thing.
Yeah, they watched the film Django. The rather kind of, I don't know, it's one of those controversial violent westerns that was, it's rather good actually, Django, the original one from the 60s. And, yeah. They're all talking and laughing and enjoying it in the cinema. Yeah, and we established this sort of, you know, violence being slightly aspirational as well, perhaps. And, yeah, it comes back at the end, I guess, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's the foreshadowing, like someone says, like the hero can't die until the last reel, kind of thing. And as soon as I heard that, there was definitely like, well, he's going to die then, isn't he?
He's going to go all Scarface at the end, isn't he? Yeah. So essentially, for Ivan, the turning point comes when he's talking to this drug dealer that we established earlier in the film. And, you know, we have a kind of one of those conversations where we're all probably leaning in a bit closer to our laptops going, what is being said? It's very dark in this outside bit. They've got a bit too realistic. And essentially, I think he establishes that, you know, there's money to be made, you know, working. You know, essentially, the cottage industry of, it's not really, it's quite a big industry. It's a kind of, there's a lot of marijuana being farmed in Jamaica, and we need someone to transport it and collect money. He's going to essentially be a low-level money collector and drug runner, isn't he? I think that's the job title that he gets to have on his CV.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I guess it's because he hasn't got that much money from making the music that he'd hoped would get him somewhere. And without the DJs all, you know, chomping at the bit to play his music, he's forced into a life of crime. And that's kind of where it moves on to, doesn't it? It kind of starts showing him be the little low-level Scarface he has to start being. Well, he's not that comparable. I think, Abby, you put the idea of Scarface in my head when you talked to me off-podcast.
It was specifically thoughts? The end that made me think.
The kind of big showdown.
Yeah.
And the fact that, I guess, he's buying clothes for himself. He's getting more arrogant as well. And he's an intrinsically violent man. you know, so he's not got a lavish lifestyle, but he is spending on clothes. But he's essentially, you know, cycling and taking a motorbike from here to there with either drugs or, you know, there's one scene I think we establish a plane landing and he has to chuck a big sack of what we assume is illegal narcotics. And then, you know, he gets paid what is, like, I don't know what they were saying, but he gets a small wadge of money compared to the big wadge that the man in charge of him has, or his friend.
And he was unhappy with that.
Yes.
Yeah. They're not getting a massive cut.
Yeah, he's essentially still in the same situation he was with the music producing. He's not very happy about that.
And presumably, pre the film, with his mango farming, you know, he's got more money from illegal, you know, drugs trade. But essentially, they are at the bottom of the pyramid. And whereas everyone else who seems to be a drug dealer is kind of like, well, this is our situation. We live in the slums. We enjoy an aggressive game of dominoes, a bit of partying in the fun fair and, you know, stuff. But essentially, no one else is really challenging the hierarchy. They're all just, you know, enjoying having funny hats and ridiculous dreads. Some of them. There's one guy in there who has, like, giant star dreads that seem to are like palm trees.
It was distracting.
It was. He seemed like a nice guy, though. He was kind of being a little father figure to one of the orphaned children who'd been, I think, come up in the story, his mother had died, she worked as a drug dealer, and there was some sort of explanation as to why there was a small child with this guy, and that, in fact, the only person who doesn't seem to be getting on with his life is Ivan, because everyone else is contently being low-paid drug mules, or whatever, or drug dealers. And they just seem, you know, let's just enjoy flying kites and drinking and, you know, and he's going to go in, I want a fairer share in this business, isn't it?
It also reminded me of, various beat to catch films when they were just on the beach mucking about with kites.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In what could be an assassination attempt or, you know, like weird just land violence. But yeah, essentially, Ivan is challenging this notion that they're getting a pretty low. When I think it's the plane he has delivered drugs to gets caught trying to go to wherever, and it's in the newspaper that it was like $100,000 worth of money, you know, of essentially marijuana in there. And he's like, I got like, you know, 10 cents. You know, he got a small amount, and it's, that's the thing. I think, I'm not 100%, because again, the dialogue is like, what are these guys saying to each other again? You know, but I took it to being the guy who'd introduced him into the life of drug dealing wasn't happy about challenging and rocking the boat too much. And potentially had partly dobbed him in. Like, there was definitely a break, wasn't there, where they became fours and they tried to kill each other, didn't they?
Yeah, that guy, I think his name was Jose. Kind of, there's a scene earlier on where it appears that even though they're like transporting like drugs all over the country, the police don't care because they kind of like wave at a police officer when they're going past. And then later on, I think Jose informs on the police, and when Ivan is like going on his own past him, that guy, that police officer comes and tries to flag him down.
Yeah, because one of the interesting political elements is there is one of the head of the police and slash army thing that's in control of, you know, this part of Jamaica. He's sort of corrupt. He allows some crime to go on so that he can better police generally. It's like he's not an out-and-out corrupt cop, but he allows a certain element of, you know, marijuana to be sold and dealt everywhere. Kind of in the interest of stopping crime generally. I mean, it's a bit, I'm a bit unsure what his motivation was, but he's an interesting figure because he's dealing with the drug dealers and allowing it to happen, but at the same time he has to crack down on it when things escalate too much, like when Ivan has killed a police officer essentially, and then he ends up going on the run and kills more police officers when he tries to escape. And so it becomes more of a manhunt for Ivan, and therefore this kind of corrupt cop has to shut down the drug dealing to force the drug dealers to turn on Ivan and hand him over. You know, it's a rather complicated bit of politics that goes on, isn't it?
Yeah. Which only kind of, like, ends up somewhat backfiring and kind of propels Ivan more into the limelight.
Yeah, because it's partly an ego thing, again. Like, before he was, you know, it was the music. And then because he's a notorious criminal on the run now, and he has a record out that is then more popular because he's in the news, he's kind of dining out on the fame and it's letting his ego get the best of him. I think at one point he, at gunpoint, forces a photographer to take some pictures of him in his cool clothes with another ridiculous hat on and, like, waistcoat with guns out. And he makes some cool poses, you know. And while at the same time trying to hide from the law and not get killed, you know. And then some of the people of Jamaica are helping him hide out because he has friends and allies. But then they get, like, they keep saying this, they're going to have to starve them out. And I think it means money and marijuana dealing and possibly food and literal starving out as well, so that his friends will turn on him.
Yeah, that's what happens. I think I've got a slightly better grasp of the plot because I had the subtitles on.
Okay.
But the police officer shuts down the marijuana trading in the town so everyone else will turn Ivan in, so it'll go on again.
I guess it's essentially the line crossed by Ivan is he becomes a cop killer, and they can't really have that escalating. Whereas if he'd have just continued to be a petty criminal, it would be no problem then. The authorities would not see it as a big issue. And the rift with his friend, like Jose, you said his name was, wasn't he? He was quite a cool character. He's fairly laid back most of the time. Even when his life's in danger, he only really runs away. He doesn't seem that intimidated by Ivan. And he's always very laid back. Like, I think we have a confrontation with Ivan and him where he's playing billiards or something, and he's just like kind of shrugging off everything Ivan says, really, is just trivial, even though Ivan's got a valid point in that they're getting paid very little for what they do, or he is anyway. But, you know, there you go. There's all of these problems that escalated essentially to this build up, which is Ivan's on the run. And he's getting more famous, but he also is being more daring, and he's taking the odd, you know, he's using the guns he's bought. That's another turning point for him, is he decides to buy guns to protect himself because he's getting into drug dealing. And there's even people within the drug dealer community who ward him off. You shouldn't, that's too serious, you know?
Yeah, and it is again, it's kind of harrowing because even though he's now kind of become a quite serious, hardened criminal, it's the most kind of control he's had over his life throughout the film.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. And essentially, the army cops or whatever who are after him are, they're led by, like, the guy in charge of them is corrupt. So there's always, it's a weird problem because the cop who's in charge of getting him is having pressure from the record producer, who's big deal where they are, to let him. He wants to essentially, he's cheeky enough to say, look, if you do get this guy, and I don't really care about him, can we maybe get him to do another record before you incarcerate him or kill him? Yeah. So there's this kind of weird problem for all the people who are living, who work in the town. And he's becoming a burden to his girlfriend as well. And she's a bit worried. I mean, Anthony, maybe you could help us out with the subtitles. But she's worried that the young kid that she's looking after is ill and stuff, and she's worried that Ivan is going to cause more problems for everyone. Is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It even with the subtitles, some things kind of flew by, and that was one of them. So if you were having a bit of problem there, I think that may be slightly the film's fault.
Well, it's trying to be nuanced, I think, as well. It's trying to be mature and nuanced. It's not just a dialect problem.
But yeah, she is forced to kind of, when he's gone and he's in hiding, she is kind of forced to kind of go back to the preacher and seek help with him.
And essentially, she essentially is the one who betrays him at the end and says, passes on the message to where he's hiding out, and that they're planning to get a boat to him, or they maybe have lied to him and said they're going to send a boat, and he's hiding out. And he's wounded because the police have attacked him once, and he managed to cycle away from all the men with machine guns. Hooray! but at the same time, Ivan, for me, becomes a character who's doomed because he doesn't just kill to save his life. He kills out of anger and revenge. Like, I think he murders there's a woman, isn't it? He comes in on a woman who he possibly has been having an affair with, who's also having an affair with Jose, the guy who's betrayed
that's right.
him. And he kills her, and it's very brutal, and she's naked and screaming, and it's kind of, oh my goodness, a bit intense and horrible of him. And then he's on the run again. So he's very much become a villain by the time the police are hunting him down on a, like, coastline. And he even almost swims to a boat and almost gets to almost get his freedom, and he can't because he's too weak, and he's back on the island. And that's when we have our final scene that kind of references the cinema. That, they go to see Django. He's reminded of Django in his kind of Scarface-esque moment on the beach against the military police. He's thinking of himself as like maybe a cowboy hero who's about to be. I think he hasn't even got bullets in his guns, has he?
No, he's used them all up. So it's a kind of Scarface meets Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid kind of thing going on. And yeah, it's kind of like, I suppose he's romanticizing it in his own head about it being like the end of the film where like the hero, goes out in a blaze of glory kind of thing.
Yeah, because he could easily hand himself in, maybe just be arrested, but it wouldn't be that tremendous a life, really. And essentially, he's got no options, and he's in his little star jumper that I like so much again, and he gets shot on the beach by these cops because he seemingly, he pulls guns on them. They don't know he's not loaded. They're not loaded, and he's shot dead. And then music plays. His song plays. So I think it's a woman dancing over the credits.
Yeah, I forgot about that. It was it's a very abrupt ending. It's just, he's dead and naked woman dancing. Okay.
And then it's like, once again, the harder they come is playing, and we're left to ponder the lyrics and enjoy the rhythm as we go, well, okay, that was a weird Jamaican crime movie. And, who knew? Jimmy Cliff, what a villain.
I think during this discussion, I feel a bit more sorry for his character overall.
Well, and
I don't think I disliked him as much as I did like when I first watched it.
I think it's because, upon reflecting on the story, you fight. Like, I just noticed more that he had a hard time.
Yeah.
And then, because you're trying to weigh up if you like him or not at the start, and he's kind of, he pushes too many obnoxious buttons, and you kind of, oh, you're not a nice guy. But, you know, he's had a hard life, so you kind of, you're willing to forgive slightly, but not entirely, because he is clearly, so he's clearly, you know, got some issues, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think it's just the kind of the lack of control that he feels he has overall. That, like, and a lot of the things aren't his fault, and he's kind of pushed in a certain way by society and wealth and all these things. So you can't really blame him. I don't really blame him as much as I did the first time I watched it.
Well, he's a vain and psycho guy at times.
Yes.
Abby, you've gone quiet. Are there other bits of the film you want to reflect on or mention?
No.
You're not. I don't think I've sold the idea that it's a compelling film to you as much as maybe I've reminded Anthony of some elements of it.
No, you haven't. I just found it dull. It's just, it covers a few topics which don't interest me.
You're kind of not interested in the sort of crime world of arrogant men and, like, just bitter, poor people.
It is a very kind of classic kind of story. A very, especially for film as well, of your kind of down on his luck hero getting into the wrong kind of business and then it all kind of ending badly.
It's like all crime movies about gangsters. Is that not something that interests you, Abby? Or, like, come on.
Well, it's not even that so much. I think it's just because, like, for me, part of the experience of film is escapism. And this film is not escapism. It's like the opposite of escapism.
Yeah. You don't want to be a drug dealer in a shanty town in Jamaica, then.
No, I don't.
Abby, you're a big hat fan. There was a guy who had a penchant for some very big and colourful hats.
I saw. And I give him props. But it is also, there is a big religious element, which I don't care for. And just everyone was having a horrible time, and that's not something I enjoy.
It was filled with too much things to dislike, and therefore you couldn't escape into it, you say. I think that's fair. It was
At points it feels kind of real. At some points I thought I was kind of, it slipped into like a docudrama at points, and you're just kind of watching these people in Jamaica live out their not-so-good lives. And I understand what you mean about, like, kind of the escapism. This is not a film about escapism. This is about, like, the harsh realities. So, yeah. I understand you're coming from there.
I think that's totally valid. I'm a big crime film fan, and though they become a bit repetitive as you watch more and more, this one had such a different flavour. And it's the setting, the era, the lifestyle, and the low level, because it's like the slums of Jamaica as well. Like, I found it to have a completely different feel to it, even though it's a kind of classic gangster story in many ways. And also, I found it intellectually, it tried to say something. It had music, it had lots of parallels of his life. I think he had a complicated life story that is a good one to tuck into as a film snob and to kind of analyse the messages and moralising and the tears of the film and what the music is saying about the story, what the life he had, the frustrations he had, like the moral ambiguities. There was a lot to tuck into on a more intellectual level, and I found it kind of compelling as this is a weird cultural film where I can't easily relate to it. So for me I found it fascinating because it was so different and intriguing and hard. It was hard to follow it at first as well. So,
Seemed like a challenge.
Plus, I do like the way they said, mango. That was, like, just generally, Jamaican people have the loveliest voices.
But no, I think you're right. I was kind of surprised by how kind of how deep the film was and how many meanings we've kind of managed to wrangle out of it here. And yeah, you're right. And I have the similar thing with, it's such a culture shock difference that you're just kind of really interested to know, like, where this is going.
Yeah. It helps in a way to enjoy it because you can't relate to very much. And maybe that's, again, another problem for you, Abby, is it's not relatable. We're not like these people. We're not gangsters. We don't live quite the slummy lives. Not far off sometimes, but like there's not much we share in common with 70s Jamaican youths and young adults.
No. It's, yeah, that is definitely an element of... There is literally no touchstone here for me to get an anchor on this film.
Well, you know, we'll get maybe a happier film next time. Do we have some kind of suggestions for ratings? I think we've all summed up our thoughts already, so any sort of rating. What kind of film is this? What would we say it is? Maybe it's hat mistakes. No, we've definitely done hats before.
Yeah.
Obsessed with hats, I'm sorry. Maybe it's, I don't know. We've got the music, we've got reggae, you know, what is it, a type of produced song? I mean, you know, anything, any suggestions for a rating? Maybe just Rasta themed. It's one of those terrible novel Rasta hats that get sold with a wig attached to just to be borderline offensive and horrible, but also really Jamaican and kind of stupid, you know, I don't know. Any suggestions?
Okay. I don't know. The film is... It's not romanticising Jamaica. It's trying to tell you the real kind of story of what it is about. Hmm. So if it is some sort of Jamaican paraphernalia, I don't think it's going to be like the ridiculous kind of... Bob Marley posters or like the giant hats you were talking about. It has to be something kind of real.
Sure.
But I don't quite know what. Like if you actually went to Jamaica and you kind of bypassed all those kind of stupid shops and you actually, you know, went into like a really small kind of horrible looking place and you find like this really nice hand carved kind of statue of it's like just the Rastafarian statue or something, and it's just really Jamaican. I don't know,
authentically Jamaican. So not the tatty market stalls and shops that are pandering and trying to sell Bob Marley to white people who've not really heard of anything other than Bob Marley and reggae. It's kind of the more authentic stuff for tourists who are more discerning. It's more a real part of Jamaica. It's some kind of authentic souvenir of Jamaica rather than, you know, a stupid multicolored bong like or something.
Yeah. I suppose most kind of like travelers would say it's the kind of the authentic. It's not the tourist Jamaica, it's the authentic Jamaica experience.
I would say that's a good analogy of sorts. Yeah, because I was going to say it's like a kind of... If it's not the novel, tacky, you know, the stuff that's all in the colours of the Jamaican flag memorabilia, it's like a bong that's got Bob Marley's face and a quote on it. But it's the one they have in the film that's just... I think in a dark alley when they start doing drugs, there's this really weird-looking pipe bong.
Oh, yeah,
it looks
like
it's a wooden, strange thing. But it's not about the aesthetic, it's just about function. And it looks kind of old and kind of knackered-looking. And it's not... cheesy and odd. So it's kind of that is my analogy. It is that kind of paraphernalia, but not the tacky kind you get in like a market stall in Britain, where it's just kind of crassly, almost racist. If the guy himself wasn't Jamaican, certainly whenever I've been to a Jamaican stall, which are in many markets across the UK, it is always a Jamaican guy. If it was like a white guy, you'd be like, "Come on, dude, what are you talking about? You don't know anything." Abby, have you had enough time to think of an analogy? / rating? / you know?
Well, for me, it's a bit like when you taste food that's an authentic dish rather than the one that Britain made.
You've tried your goat curry. You didn't get on with it.
I haven't tried goat curry, but you get my meaning. Where it's just like, oh, this is how it really tastes?
Yeah, I think that's quite a good analogy. especially comparing like Britain to Jamaica. Because it's like, our curries here are all right, but, you know, they're nothing special, and they're not, like, overly spicy or shocking. Mm. But I imagine, like, if you went to, like, Jamaica and you ordered some, like, authentic kind of jerk kind of food, and it would just kill you.
Yeah. you would not, your bowels wouldn't be able to cope. Yeah, so I like that. That's a nice idea, Abby. Like, maybe it's got too many scotch bonnets. It's got reggae sass on it. Like,
okay, nobody has a frame of reference for that for me. You just sound like a massive racist.
Oh, well, I do. Okay, the reference point is me and Abby watched the guy who made reggae sauce, a popular brand in Britain of just sauce, like that goes on chicken and things. And he was doing a light daytime cookery show, and he kept saying Scotch bonnet, like in a really
funny
way.
He's obsessed with Scotch bonnets.
He does. It's his key recipe. Reggae sauce. Oh, we're not sponsored. We're not going to give him a plug. But I think that's it's that kind of thing, isn't it? That kind of it's Jamaican cuisine, but. It's not, you know, not everyone can stomach it sometimes. I get you, Abby. Do you like reggae sauce? Because I do not. That would be, if no. I'd have not enjoyed this film, that would have been my analogy. And I apologise if I sounded mocking with my voice. But I do it out of affection for people who have a tremendous accent. That's my defence, anyway. But we've tried some Jamaican cinema now, guys. Some good, some bad in it. But that's what Spoilerfield's about. It's about championing the unusual, and we've talked about it. And that, I think, is the podcast.
I think you're right.
I think you're right, too.
Time to say goodbye.
Goodbye, world.
Bye!
Jah be praised.